WSHE-HD2 Chicago, a Good Karma Brands radio station.
Live coverage of today's draft is brought to you in part by Toyota. Let's go places. The most anticipated draft in Chicago football history is here. From Detroit to Hallis Hall to Soldier Field, our live coverage continues with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
All right, back at Soldier Field. We'll talk to Courtney Cronin here in just a minute. It's a 2 hours from the Bears getting on the clock. It's been the moment that we have been waiting for a long, long time. As I mentioned earlier, this could be the moment that we've been waiting our whole Bears fan life for, as we hope that this is the Bears quarterback that everyone's been wanting and waiting for forever, and that's the only way you can go through it. And I understand if you don't want to go through it that way, but that's the way I choose to look at it.
You asked me what my expectations are for Caleb Williams in 2024. What are yours?
My expectations are that the Bears will win, and that the Bears will win at a high level this year, and that we see a consistency in play that we haven't seen any Bears quarterback play at maybe ever. Maybe at some point with McMahon, but it was a different era then, and I don't think they threw the ball. And if you look at some of the numbers, he certainly didn't completed at a high percentage.
They were winning with great defense in the league's best running game.
Yeah, sure. And like Jay, as we know, was up and down and could wow you, and Justin could wow you at certain time with highlight plays. But I believe like that I really think that there's a chance of him rewriting the record books this year.
Well, yeah, I mean that's my hope would be that from an eye test perspective, as I said before the break, my expectation is that we get to the end of this year, and yes, they have won more than they have lost. Hopefully they are propelled into the postseason, and you look at his body of work as a rookie and you say, this is better than what we've seen the last 3 years. Not taking a shot at Justin. Justin did not have the same infrastructure that Caleb Williams will have. But I believe Caleb has the ability to be a better quarterback than Justin was. And with a better surrounding cast, my expectation is the quarterback play in 2024 should be significantly better than what we've seen the last 3 years. That's my expectation.
And it won't just be a hero ball, or it won't just be putting up numbers for the sake of numbers. I believe that they're going to win because they're surrounded well. And the defense, let's not forget about them. I think that they're poised to have a good year as well. I think 10 wins is that's where my bar is. And it could fluctuate, and hopefully for the higher instead of the lower. But 10 wins is where I'm going into this season.
And he's got to be part of the engine. And it's the subtle things as well. It's not just the stats. Look, we're looking for him to be the first quarterback in Bears history to throw for better than 4,000 yards and throw for better than 30 touchdown passes. But we're all also looking for somebody who plays the position at a high level consistently. And you have to factor in some of the things that Tom Thayer described. Like, when the quarterback is functioning in the pocket, he is not compromising his left tackle or his right guard or his right tackle, that he's playing the position and the protections are set accordingly, so they're working in unison, hand in glove, so to speak, where the quarterback is expecting his left tackle to do something and the left tackle is expecting the quarterback to do something, and when they all do their jobs and they're all working together, the end result is significantly better more consistently. So, look, this is the beginning of some really exciting times, and I think tonight will be a very exciting night. The intrigue will not be there with the first overall selection. It will be a celebration, but then I think it really gets interesting and cool and fun when they are on the clock to pick at 9 overall. That's when it will be very interesting.
So, let's go to a Hallis Hall right now. And Courtney Cronin is ready to join us on the CarX Tire and Auto Hotline and set the scene for us right there. Courtney, what are your expectations for not only obviously Caleb Williams in the big picture, but what are your expectations on what you expect the Bears to do with the rest of the night at 9, or if not 9, then where?
Yeah, I think it's you know, this is a situation where they have less bites at the apple than they typically do. And if you know Ryan Poles, you know what he likes and enjoys doing during the draft. And a conversation I had with him earlier in the pre-draft process was about how he's going to handle number nine and potentially trading back, and whether he's going to feel stressed or, you know, that he needs to add more draft capital. And because of the way the last two draft classes have panned out, where they've had double digits each year, and those players started playing right away. I mean, you go back to 2022 and you had significant instant contributions from the likes of Jaquan Brisker, Kyler Gordon, and you can go even to last year with Darnell Wright being a home run hit for them and moving back one spot. Like, the reason they had such good draft classes and had so many players contribute is because they have been so active on draft day trades. But I wouldn't rule out them staying there at nine. They're not going to move just for the sake of moving, because how often do you get a top 10 pick? You technically don't want to be in that situation by your own record, because that means that you had a poor finish from the previous year. And what they're trying to do is get out of that territory. And it's an opportunity now, whether they get a pass rusher at that spot, whether they get a wide receiver, whether it is an offensive lineman, to bring somebody in who can be a franchise player, like the quarterback that they're going to draft number one overall. But if they can still find somebody, we don't know how many first round grades they have. Usually for most teams, it's anywhere from like 14 to 16. That guys have true blue chip, you know, upper echelon, this is a first round grade. Because then you start to venture into territory where you'd be okay moving back for a player, but you don't want to move back too far. So if there's a chance for them, I'd say keep an eye on the Saints. I believe they're at 14. Keep an eye on them to potentially be in the mix to move up, and the Bears to move back. But there really aren't a whole lot of other options that jump off the page right now as the no-brainer. This is going to be a spot where a team wants to move up to get the Bears pick, because you got to figure, what are the positions that people are expecting, GMs around the league are expecting to have a run? When does the run start on offensive linemen? Will there be a run after eight if the Atlanta Falcons take a defensive end there, whether it's Jared Verse, whether it's Dallas Turner, and then other teams want to get in on the mix if it's not the Bears? Like, there's a lot of options here, but we all know what's happening at number one, and there's definitely, from people I've talked with in the building today, this tangible excitement of, let's just get to draft night, get on the clock, make this happen. Of course, they're going to have to wait, you know, the 10 minutes or so till, you know, becomes official because of how the NFL likes to, you know, keep the draft intrigue going. But they're ready. They're ready to turn the page, and all of the talk that's gone on the last couple of months finally turns to a different topic after that pick is made at number one overall.
Courtney, where do you believe their greatest area of need is after quarterback?
The greatest area of needs on the defensive line, like whether that's on the edge, whether that's on the interior, is up for, I guess, interpretation based on who's looking at it. But that's their biggest need. At receiver, which could be in play for them at nine, is it a need right now? Not necessarily, but you can handle the short-term and long-term goals that you have for that position by taking a player at that spot. But if you're drafting purely off need, which if you're using a top 10 pick, you're not often in a situation where you're going all in on a need. It's usually best player available, because that's a top 10 talent. So if it was strictly off of need, it would be a no-brainer that they'd go after a defensive lineman, but I just don't think you can rule out the other two positions there that are the high value, the ones that you want to have the fifth-year option for, the opportunity to develop these players and pay them at a later date when they become the franchise player you set out for them to be when you drafted them. But I look at the situation right now and I feel like it's going to end up being between a pass rusher or a wide receiver. And if the board falls the way that we've seen a lot of these mocks go, then there's going to be a high quality wide receiver just falling to them and there for the taking at number nine.
And if that's the case, they don't trade back then. They just grab that guy.
I find it hard to believe that they would, because, you know, what Poles talks about, getting impact players in here and how much more difficult it's going to be to make the team this year as opposed to last year. Like, when you have that type of talent, that's what makes you a competitive football team. And if you pass up on that opportunity because you think that another player brought in via a draft pick this year is the way to go, then I think you're kind of sacrificing a really good player in the short term for a long-term thing that just frankly they don't need to go about that. They don't need to fill out the roster with bodies this year the way that they did the last few years. They can turn the page towards the next step in getting this rebuild in, you know, in a different direction. And now it doesn't even need to be called it's whatever the next word you would use after rebuild. That's what tonight is. We're not talking about, you know, finding depth pieces for the offensive line in the fourth through seventh round that you anticipate either being that or having to start the way that Braxton Jones did a few years ago. Now you're talking about the high-end talent that you bring in right away and expect to become instant contributors. So if you have a Roma Dunze, a Malik Nabers, whoever it is, at nine, you take that player. And I feel like that's a situation that they're looking at right now as they wade the board throughout the entire pre-draft process, of finding those multipliers to make Caleb Williams' job easier when he comes in, because they already did the hard work the last 2 years of building this roster to where it's at a advantageous point for a rookie coming in that it typically wouldn't have been for a team that had the number one overall pick.
How surprised would you be, Courtney, if in fact they moved up instead of moving back?
I would be surprised. They don't have the draft capital for it this year, and to give up next year's picks to move up, you better be damn sure that this is the player that you want. And if it's somebody they're in love with, like let's say it's Joe Alt, or let's say it is Marvin Harrison Jr., you have to weigh whether you can get that same caliber of player at the spot where you're initially expected to draft, which would be at number nine, versus I have to give up this year's pick, and maybe it's Carolina's pick next year. Maybe teams are calling eyeing that pick, knowing what Carolina is anticipated to be as a football team this year. I just feel like that's reaching for something that you just don't have to do, considering they like their flexibility. That's not just lip service. The positions that they have that are of need and that also quantify as the best player available at number nine fall into the wide receiver, offensive line, and pass rusher category, where I don't think that they need to mortgage the future to handle a need if they just stay at that spot.
Yeah. All right, Tom Thayer is here, and I know he had a very interesting question for you.
I'm sorry to bring it down like this, Courtney, though, because I was thinking about you listening to you on the radio, all the work you do, and I think you are one of the most talented voices in all of sports. Your knowledge is second to none, and I'm just so impressed with your talent. And my question to you was, are you fun to watch sports with, or are you always working?
You should have seen me during game two the other night, both of them. So first it starts with a Dante DiVincenzo double bang, and I live alone, so fortunately I wasn't waking anybody up in my apartment, but I damn sure should have gotten a noise violation for how loud I was yelling in that moment. And then you fast forward when I'm half asleep about 3 hours later when Jamal Murray hits the game winner in the Denver game. And I'm screaming again, and I'm like, how am I going to settle down and get ready to go to bed, because I had to be up here for draft coverage all day Tuesday. Like, when I'm not covering an event, when I'm able to watch it as a fan, like, I can really get into it, and I very much enjoy it. And the NBA playoffs, to me, I know some people have some things to say about how they feel that those games go and that you shouldn't pay attention until it comes to the finals, but I really enjoy getting into it, and it's a lot of fun for me to consume.
Courtney, it's Joniak. What's the first sporting event you ever went to as a kid?
Oh, my God. That's a great question. I know I went to a couple Bulls games that I have, like, vague memories of during the Jordan era, because, you know, I was young then. It was, you know, in 1996, I was 6 years old. I know my first sporting event was around then, but
we're really in trouble with her. Wow. Six?
I'll say the first game that I can truly, like, the games that I remember, like what I consider my childhood, like 98, the home run race between Sosa and McGuire. Like, I remember going to games at Wrigley that summer, and my dad would bring us, and it was just, you know, that was my childhood. That's what made me fall in love with that team. And then there was that tiebreaker game that was on a Monday in September I want to say in 98 or 99 that we got to get out of school early for. And it's just a very vivid memory. I can only remember who the Cubs played there for one of the playoff spots. But those are my very, very early Chicago childhood sports memories that are happy ones. Like, we didn't go to Bears games as a family because we were a college football family because my parents didn't want to pay to send us to go watch Cade McNown. So, like, I don't have those sorts of memories.
Good choice.
But my memories in Chicago as a kid were growing up watching the Cubs and the Bulls in person.
Courtney, since you're such a Chicago diehard, how many dollars are you willing to chip in for the Bears' new stadium?
Am I allowed to answer this?
Yes, yes, you're expected to answer.
So, no new taxes, right? That's what Brandon Johnson told us yesterday. So, no new taxes. That means that I don't have to pay anything, right? I just don't have to be. I just guess that people come into town for events next year paying $500 for a hotel room. Do I have that right?
It's probably going to be $1,500 next year instead of $500, you know, because we got to pay this debt down, Courtney. So
yeah, like I thought the debt was already supposed to be paid, and then yesterday you hear just the figure of how long that loan has been going on, and we're still paying for the last renovations at Soldier Field. I don't make that kind of dough, though. So, you know, don't look at me to get this stadium paid for. I'm going to look at Waddle for that.
No.
The wedding you just paid for at the Drake last year, like, I think that they're going to be looking for you to pony up some cash to get that stadium built.
Yeah, well, I can show you the price tag of staying at the Drake for a wedding. And I've got another one in November, so, like, you ain't getting any of my money.
Nope. You and I are going to talk about that.
Yes, we do.
I want to know what the plan is in terms of, like, what do you have to set aside?
Oh, you got one on the horizon?
No, I got to prepare.
Yeah.
I got two daughters. Courtney, I don't know.
I have one more draft question for Courtney. And I was thinking, does the whatever picks you make at 1 and 9, does it have any influence on 75? I know there's a huge distance. So if you get a quarterback, you get a wide receiver, are you ultimately looking at a mid-range defensive lineman, offensive lineman?
I think so. I think running back's not a need. We know that when you take a look at what day 3 is probably going to present, that's when most of that market is going to get tapped into in the draft. They already handled that in free agency. They handled safety in free agency. Honestly, they probably could use another linebacker at some point. When you take a look at, I think it was over 1,000 yards that they allowed to running backs catching passes out of the backfield, that to me shows that they probably need some better linebacker depth. But when you only have 4 picks and 4, you know, few bites at the apple that they typically don't have, you're not going to be taking swings on guys that you can end up signing in college free agency and targeting some of those positions at a later part of the draft or even after the draft when Saturday wraps up. So if I'm looking at it right now, projecting it out, it's Caleb Williams at 1, it's a wide receiver or defensive end at 9, and then you flip the order for 75, and then 122 is probably a sweet spot to get an interior offensive lineman and bring somebody in for depth.
I think Jeff Joniak asked arguably the most intriguing question of the entire day to this point. What if the Bears decide, because it's such a rich draft early, and there are some that will tell you after a certain point this is going to be one of the lesser drafts in modern times. Jeff brought up the question, what if the Bears decide to use some of their currency from next year's to move back into the first round this year? So you get 1-9, and because it's such a talented draft, maybe you move into the first round to find somebody this year at the end of the first round. What do you think of that option?
I think that there will be buyers for that scenario. Detroit's trying to trade out of the first round. You just have to weigh, like, what are going to be that? Where's the run starting on those positions? Like, are the interior of the offensive line, are you going to see those players go off the board in the late 20s? Will there be other wide receivers? Like, if that's not something that they take, a position that they address at 9, and they feel that they're going to miss out on that run in the second round and that somebody that they're eyeing won't be there at 75, is that a scenario where, you know, throw out Xavier Worthy's name? I don't think he'll be there, but that would be a Keon Coleman, some of those guys that are those early day 2 picks. If the Bears feel that they're going to miss out on that position if they don't get back in, then maybe you go that route. I just, the thought of trading next year's draft capital for a late first round pick and obviously packaging it maybe with 75 or with 122 and however you want to go about it, that seems like a really rich price to go about it, but it's, they're going to have to be patient. Like, if they can't find a trade partner, they're not going to do it trade just for the sake of trading. And you've got to make sure that with such few draft picks, the fewest that they've had in a very long time and the fewest of in the NFL this year, that you nail these picks and that you're finding players that you're dead set and sure about. Like, these can't be the flyers that you take on players that you might have in previous years where you had a little bit more wiggle room to gamble with. Like, this is going to be a very expensive draft class, but given where they're drafting, it should be one of their best draft classes in recent history based on what happens tonight at both picks.
Courtney, I was listening to Ian Cunningham talk with Ryan Poles the other day and the love affair that those two have with each other and how they rebuilt this team together. Ian Cunningham talked about, like, it's very rare that you get to do this with your best friend. And a lot of people were writing, and they just gave him a contract extension, but a lot of people know that it won't be long before he gets his own team as a general manager. I was thinking about this the other day as the Bears continue to build out their front office with vice presidents. This is very in vogue in baseball these days, where you have a president of baseball, like how Theo was, and then you have a general manager on how Jed was. And that way you kept both of them. You have two people do it. For instance, now Jed's your president of baseball operations, and Carter Hawkins is your GM. Is there any way the Bears could promote, you could promote Poles and make Ian Cunningham your general manager, still doing the same jobs, but just giving him an elevation in salary and title and keeping him here?
There's some different front office structures. You don't often see that in football. I know some places don't have assistant general managers. They'll have a president of football operation or VP of football operations, whatever the title is, to keep good people in the building and people who end up pulling a lot of strings behind the scenes. And, you know, the example I think of, which was the GM and assistant GM structure, the Vikings were throwing cash year after year at George Payton when he was flirting with, oh, I'm going to go be the Jets GM, or I'm going to go interview for this job. And then his salary kept going up and up and up because they knew that he was vital to their process. Rick Spielman would vouch it for him to the Wilfs to get him to stay in that structure. And they were so successful with their draft classes because of what they built there. And what you're seeing with Poles and Cunningham, that's not lip service. Like, what the two of them, you know, I go back to the time when Ryan's interviewing for the Carolina job in 2021. He's talking with Ian through that process, and those two were starting to plant the seeds of, well, if you get hired first, you know, you bring me on. If I get hired first, I'll bring you on. And weird's not the right word. It's a unique situation because so often you'll see front offices that are built because, you know, just think about it, like with Ryan Pace, like all of those, most of the guys that came in with him came from New Orleans and that power structure. Foles and Cunningham had never worked together. Ian came up through Baltimore and through the Philly system, and Ryan spent his entire career in Kansas City. So they had known each other because they'd be on, you know, when they were area scouts, like they would cross paths that way. They formed a bond, but they never had the working experience to know how well this structure was going to work. So the fact that they both came in together in 2022, rented a house together in Lake Bluff, I believe, and lived there for, you know, the better part of the offseason until their families were able to come up, and would drive together to work every day, would drive home, and were roommates through this process, not only building a roster, but living together. You've got to find the right sort of chemistry and really like the person you're working with in order to have that sort of dynamic, because there were a lot of really tough days early on when they're trying to rip this thing down and start over. And for them to have have made it this far, and Ian obviously has interviewed every offseason, and his time's coming, and he knows it. I mean, he said as much about his goal and what's next for him eventually, but the Bears are going to try to keep him in the mix for as long as they can, because we know there is no better person when it comes, like, think of all the trades that have happened in the last couple of years. When you go back to that first year, Philadelphia for the Robert Quinn trade, Baltimore for the Roquan Smith trade. Whose relationships do you think they were leaning on most heavily?
Yeah.
Connect the dots there. Yeah. Like, Ian is a very, very valuable part of this front office, and Poles knows that, which is why when he's up there talking, like, that's real. Like, you don't often see that sort of, you know, dynamic in front offices, because sometimes they're arranged, sometimes you have people that are holdovers from previous staffs, but these two coming in at the same time in 2022 and getting this far with this rebuild, they rely on each other for a lot, and that institutional knowledge will not be easy to replace when Ian Cunningham inevitably gets a GM job of his own one day.
Well, think how quickly the TJ Edwards deal came about. And you're talking about a linebacker from Philadelphia that he had a little bit of experiences with. And he has shined as bright as you can shine as a free agent in that decision.
Yeah. All right, Courtney, great stuff.
Thanks, Courtney.
You.
Enjoy the night.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Courtney.
Take care.
Really good stuff from Courtney Cronin.
Yes.
And some interesting things on the red carpet from Caleb Williams. I want to share that with you coming up next.
Live coverage of today's draft is brought to you in part by Old National Bank, where relationships and results matter. Get old.
It's draft day, and we are live from Soldier Field. It's the Waddle and Sylvie Show on ESPN Chicago.
So in 90 minutes from now, the Bears will be on the clock, and they're going to select Caleb Williams. We've known that for a while here now.
Forever.
Our buddy Josh Schrock from NBC Sports Chicago tweeted this out. Picture of Caleb Williams on the red carpet. He did do what he promised. He painted those pinkies silver.
Just like Cap. He got that from Cap.
Did Cap only do one
just
finger?
Just one.
Why did he do one finger now?
I don't know. Maybe.
Caleb's got both pinkies silver.
Yeah.
Thayer, are you going to do the pinky nail silver?
Hey, if he wins the Super Bowl,
yeah,
I'll paint my toes, my fingers, and everything.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and
get colored contacts.
And so I like this quote, though. Tell me what you guys think, because I know a lot of Bears fans want to know, because I'm sure here in the spring it's going to be the top-selling jersey, if not the top-selling jersey in the NFL, one of the top-selling jerseys in the NFL. He was 13 in college. Will he get 13? Who's going to get number 13? And Caleb Williams said on potentially wearing number 13, if it's the Bears, I don't know. There's a 13-year Hall of Fame vet there, so that might be tough.
Keenan Allen.
So, yes, and deferring as he should to
absolutely
Keenan
right.
Allen getting number 13.
So if he doesn't have 13, what number do you want to see him in?
Whichever number
if he wins a Super Bowl, I don't care.
Right.
Yeah, I don't care.
You know, I mean,
I thought there was a rumor, I forget what number it was.
That it was going to be zero?
Yeah. I don't think they want
18.
Anyone.
18 was the rumor.
18's been the rumor?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Was that Kyle Orton? Who was 18?
Yeah, Kyle Orton.
Orton was 18.
Steve Stenstrom. Was Stenstrom 18?
I think you're right.
I think so. Tom, Zach, and Orton. Those are the two guys.
I could win a lot of money if I was participating in odd trivia questions.
Useless bear knowledge by Tom Wild.
Yeah, like if you... I don't remember anything.
Anything.
And then
and
out of the blue,
I remember. Steve Stenstrom.
Yeah.
You remember Steve Stenstrom's number?
Yep.
I will ask you stuff from like a game this year, and you'll be like, don't remember. How do you remember that, Sylvie?
I don't know.
In the meantime, you'll pull Steve Stenstrom.
Do you have memory problems?
It depends what you're asking me. 60s TV shows? No. I could, you know.
See, it's odd things.
Well,
odd
right.
things that you remember better.
But when we were younger, those things always meant more because our brain was clouded with less. So I think those things always, like with Brady Bunch trivia, I could go and do that stuff. But with stuff that happened in the last few years, I'm bad with names, bad with numbers now.
When I listen to your show, you'll bring up a Cubs score from 2018.
He remembers everything.
Yeah,
or
everything.
Something that happened with the Bears in 2015 to 2022. And your remembrance of that, it kind of worries me because I don't remember things like that. But I can take so I was doing an appearance a couple weeks ago, and I was looking at pictures of myself. I can take the picture, and I can tell you what the play was, what the game was, what the outcome is, and I can tell you a lot about the game.
You could look at a picture and know what play it was?
Yeah.
I can look at football cards. Like a young lady just gave me a bunch of football cards to sign. And I would say probably 75% of them, even if you can't tell who you're playing against, I can tell you if there's one against the Tampa Bay Bucks. We put in this very special play for the Bucks because we saw them the week before get beat on corner post move. So we put it in. So that week we put in it where I was the ex receiver. I ran post corner post, and the cornerback for Tampa had been susceptible to. We ran the play. And there's a football card where I go up and I catch the pass. And I remember the play. Like, it was underthrown a little bit.
Right.
But I had to go up and go get it. But I remember the exact play because we put it in that week because we'd seen it on film that this corner would bite on a post-corner move. But I can't remember my kids' names sometimes.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I got three dogs, and I go through all three of them every time I'm trying to say the first name. Right, but it's the same thing. There's a play that McMahon ran in the NFC Championship game against the Rams. And the protection was West 88. That was the call in the huddle. And McMahon ended up scrambling for a touchdown. But I can look at the still shot, and I can look at what position we're in terms of our protection, and I can tell you what the protection was and what the outcome of the play was.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's uncanny the things that I can remember, and it's disturbing the things I forget.
What was the play of the year from this past year? This is obviously not from your playing career, but what is the play that most stood out to you that exemplified the 2023 Chicago
Bears? Can I go first?
Yeah.
So. I'm gonna call an audible real quick here because it's not the Bears' play. It's a play that came from the opponent that defined the season for me. Do you remember? I believe it was fourth down against the Green Bay Packers in the opening game of the season, and they ran a Texas route with Aaron Jones. And I believe it was fourth down. And
did he pull his hamstring too?
He did going into the end zone.
Yeah. See, I remember that.
So that to me, because the loss to the Packers was still, and I know they blew some leads this year. That loss, Tom, to the Packers was the one that hit me hardest.
Me too.
And lasted with me the entire season for so many reasons. Mm-hmm. But that play is the play that kind of defined the entire season for me with the benefit of hindsight.
The most exciting play to me was DJ Moore's touchdown catch against the Washington Commanders in the corner of the end zone when I was thinking there's no way that he caught, and Jeff called the touchdown, and I didn't even think that he had a chance of making the catch.
Yeah.
And, he had a really explosive game that game against the Commanders, had a record-setting day if they didn't inadvertently call him out of bounds when he wasn't out of bounds on that one touchdown, which would have been a touchdown run. But that catch in the corner of the end zone by DJ was amazing.
Speaking of DJ, the first time I've ever seen DJ in person was here at the draft, this very show last year. And the first thing that I remember that kind of came across me was he is thick. He's built like a running back, but plays wide receiver like an all-pro wide receiver, strong, like, and not short, 6 foot tall. But I was like, when I stood next to him, I was like, he looks like a running back from our day, not a wide receiver.
That's what they kind of say about Malik Nabers.
Yeah.
He has that lower body thickness. He ran that 4.35 40 at his pro day, that he's got that ability to run through attempted tackles downfield and stuff. So, and I think that's kind of makes you think about the receiver position here. Do you want a Keon Coleman from Florida State?
Right, you don't want redundancy.
Right. And, you know, so Xavier Worthy, you know, that run the fastest 40 that is, you know, Willie Gault, when he came here with world-class speed in the Super Bowl year, he only caught one touchdown. But each week he scared the safeties where they had to be in a backpedal. And that's what a guy like Worthy would do. And, you know,
that's kind of why I like Odunze a little bit as well, because I look at Neighbors and I see DJ.
Yeah.
I think DJ is a more complete receiver. I think, but I see Odunze at 6'3 and 215 pounds who can do some of the stuff that DJ does, but he can also do a lot of the stuff that Keenan Allen can do.
Right.
And I'm with you, and I think you mentioned this a while ago about the redundancy is something that I wouldn't want to seek out at that position.
You know, the interesting guy for the Bears who's on the roster, and he's going to get Colin Johnson. I think he wears number 80. You know, of any wide receivers the Bears already have on staff, Colin Johnson is probably the best and most physical interior blocking wide receiver of the crew. And I don't think that you can just look at pass catching ability and leave out the importance of the blocking ability of these receivers. So, you know, Colin Johnson came onto the roster late last year. He had some big blocks in the interior of the formations, and I'm interested to see, because he's a 6'4 guy that can come in here and maybe add to that position that you don't think that you already have.
Kind of what you got out of EQ when he was here.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah.
Because he left. EQ
yeah.
left to
yeah.
go to New Orleans, I think. Right?
You know what?
New Orleans.
Yeah, I was never enamored by him. I never thought that the Bears got a great deal. And I don't know if that was a Luke Getsy influence or
sure was.
They thought he would help.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, Joniak's back with us. I want to get some predictions. I know you guys are going to be on all night. Joniak said he'll do till 1 in the morning tonight yeah. on ESPN 1000 and the Bears Radio Network. But I want to give you an example, predictions, and I want to give you an example of something that we got a report on earlier about being open for business in a tweet from another reporter. This is a really good example on how these things can manifest themselves.
If it's on tweet, it's true.
Well, yeah, but I think you'll enjoy this one. I think you'll understand what I'm saying coming up next as we're live at Soldier Field and we're getting set for the Bears draft.
Live coverage of today's draft is brought to you in part by Hard Rock Casino, Northern Indiana. It's draft day, and we are live from Soldier Field. And this is the Waddle and Sylvie Show on ESPN Chicago.
All right, we're back at Soldier Field getting set for the Bears to be on the clock at about 7 o'clock. Joniak could there take over the driver's seat at 6 o'clock.
Yeah, turn it over just, to the big shooters.
Just the way Jeff likes it.
Yes.
Boss.
So can we call you boss, too?
No.
No?
No, we're just friends.
Okay.
We're just good friends.
Work acquaintances.
Brothers. Can we be brothers?
Absolutely.
Brothers got a hug.
You are a big hugger. I'll tell
I am.
You that.
I am.
I would have never expected that.
Why?
He's got four daughters.
Yeah.
They got a hug.
We got six daughters.
I got to do a quick Joniak's journal here.
Go.
Quick hitters, guys. Quick hitters. This is, Thayer, you'll like this. This is from Jeremy Fowler. This illustrates what you were saying before about Diana Russini, about the Bears are open for business at 9. Jeremy Fowler tweeted this out saying, going around the league and talking to sources, teams inside the top 10 who are, quote, open for business.
Right.
The Patriots, open. The Cardinals, open. The Chargers, they're 7-11 open. That means, you know, all the way open, you know, 24-7 open. The Titans at 7, willing to listen. They're a soft open. The Falcons, open. The Bears, open. The Jets, soft open. Basically, everyone inside the top 10 are listening. It doesn't mean that you're going to trade down.
As they should be.
You're just listening.
So, yeah. So when you're the number one pick, do you run to the podium?
Yes.
You do. So yeah. Within the first minute, you make the pick.
Oh, no. I know you want to take your full 15.
Yeah.
I
want to take the time to open up my phone lines.
Yes.
You know.
I agree with you on that.
I'm running
your full
it up
15.
There.
Are you?
It's excited like a child.
Oh, no. You
Christmas morning.
Yeah.
I'm
running straight
exposure.
Up.
You get your exposure.
Well, first
you,
of all,
you let your highlights play.
Yeah, you do. But
I'm running up there like a child.
There's this idea, though, that these trades are just going to come out of thin air. They've been rehearsed all week. Yeah. They've been floated. They've been called. They've been, hey, would you guys possibly be interested in X, Y, and Z?
If this happens.
As long as you're on the hook, all right, we'll put you in the queue. You got our number, we got your number. This is the right connection. Boom. But I think in your mind, I mean, they're drafting the guy.
I know, but I tell him, I go, Caleb, we're going to pick you. There's no secret. All I'm trying to do is extend the time I have
at
the number 9
pick. He wants to take the full 15 before you make
before
the announcement.
You run up
That's
there.
All he said.
I don't want to be tracking Goodell as he's walking off the podium.
I'm going to beat him to the podium.
But why not? What's your point?
I'm just trying to open up the allotted amount of time I have before the 9th pick to see if anybody wants to call me.
Before the 9th pick.
Yeah, before the 9th pick.
Use more time.
I got you.
Let the clock. Use the clock. Let the clock be your friend.
Right.
I see what he's saying.
You know, there may be someone that's calling teams 7, 8, and 6, and then they get denied. And all of a sudden, hey, the next possible opportunity to get this so-and-so player is at number 9. Let me call Ryan and see what he thinks.
Well, you know, there's a great point there, too, because general managers, they often talk about, like, oh, the fans say, oh, how come you couldn't make a trade here? Well, I thought you were going to make a trade. You know, you got to have a partner.
Right.
Like the phone's not ringing. What do you want me to do? I can't, like, invent something out of thin air here.
Sylvie, so when I was drafted, it was on a Tuesday. And from the time they made the first pick, they stayed on until they made the very last pick, which could be at 2 or 3 in the morning. Could you imagine yourself back in that day doing radio from 11 a.m. until 3 in the morning?
Probably, yes.
Yeah, I was going to say. That's in his wheelhouse. Like, what are you talking about?
Joniak, too.
Yeah, that's what we're grinders.
Right.
We're grinders.
I was on the golf course when the draft started back in 1989. That was a Freudian slip back in 1889. Back in 1989, I was on the golf course.
Did anybody make any promises to you in advance of the draft?
No.
Nobody?
No.
Were you there
Not
purposely
even
and like antagonistically on the golf course because – you know, I'm not worried about this.
No, because I knew sincerely, like, there was no chance. So why, I mean, what am I going to do, sit around and wait? I had buddies and friends that wanted to go to the golf course, so I went with them.
Does your accomplishment surprise you? Or did you know that you had that in you?
I thought that if I was given the right opportunity, I could find a way to make a team and contribute.
Right.
I mean, listen, if you don't have confidence in yourself, you've already lost the battle. So, I never walked into the door thinking that, look, okay, I'm going to own this play. And no, I mean, I never did. And I played the same way for the last time I was on the field back in 1994 as I did the first time I was in 89.
Like Mike Ditka says, what the mind believes, the body can achieve.
Yeah, exactly. Body broke down quickly, though.
Did you ever have a crossroads moment in your playing life, could have been youth, could have been NFL, where you lost a bit of confidence and you had to get it back? He had to reel it back in.
I lost all of my confidence when I went to Cincinnati in 1995 as a free agent, and physically I was kind of cooked. But I went out for the first practice and I couldn't track the ball well, and the ball, I wasn't catching it. And from that first practice in mini camp, I completely lost all the confidence I had, and I knew I was done, and I retired 3 days later, because I wasn't going to sit out there and embarrass myself.
You had something similar, right, at the end of the season in Miami?
Well, the last game of the year, I was on kickoff return, and I was watching the ball sail over my head, and I had to make a block because I was in the wedge, and I'm going, I don't want to do this anymore.
Oh, man.
And I went
That's
to
a harsh office. Reality
it
at
is.
That moment.
Went in, got changed, sat on the bus with Coach Shula, and I said, Coach Shula, I said, you know, you should look for another guy because I'm going to retire. And he says, Tom, I never listen to veterans the first 10 days after the season's over. Take your time, and we'll give you a call.
Mm. But you knew it was over.
Yeah.
In some ways, it's cathartic. It's a relief.
Yes.
Because you've spent your entire life, and Tom, like, you were a significantly better player than me and reached higher heights. So, you know, your career spanned a longer period of time. I wanted it to last as long as possible, but there was no chance that I was going to stay out there. And
how old were you when you retired?
I was only 28.
28.
I think it was 28.
It's not. I was 33, but I mean, there's not a big difference there. It's that what the toll it took on your body up until that point that said, well, whether it's mentally or physically, eventually it's going to come to an end.
Yeah.
All right, let's get predictions. I'm going, obviously, you know, Caleb. I'm going to say they get Roma Dunze.
I will as well. I'll second that. Roma Dunze at 9.
Do you guys are you guys going to make a predictions? Are you going to wait till the draft starts since you guys are continuing?
I mean, yeah, we're still on together, so let's, you know.
The last time you suckered us into a prediction was about the scheduling before the season.
He had 11-6.
Oh, yeah.
I still have that paper.
Yeah, well, hey, again, they got to 7.
They did.
And they should have won at least 3 more.
That's right. It wasn't you. It was them.
It was
you
them.
You didn't make a mistake. It was them.
You were only 4 wins short.
Yeah, well, I think
not
I was 1 win short, actually. They should have won 3 games. The 3 games. Should have beat the Lions twice.
Amen.
And Cleveland. And Denver.
Gosh, the shoulda, woulda, coulda game.
All right, guys.
Those days are gone.
Yes.
Those days are gone. New day is here.
This is the dawn of a new era.
Yeah.
And Joniak and Thayer will usher it in. Coming up next, the draft is set to start 1 hour from right now. Thank you to Tyler Aki, to Jeff Meller back at the studio, Danny Zetterman, Eric Ostrowski. Kevin Zipak is helping out here, too.
Thank you to Courtney for joining us as well.
Yes, thank you.
Pat the designer
helping out.
Or the other designer.
He's got the mojo working. And our entire marketing team out here helping us out. For Tom and Jeff, who will be up next, and Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great draft night and go Bears.